Hello, my name is Shannon, and I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I'd like to welcome you to our sponsorship speaker series. I'd like to thank all of our speakers, committee members, and volunteers who have done great service to make this happen. The speakers are being recorded, and copies will be available in the future. I would like to now introduce Kevin, who will be speaking on...
Yes, sponsorship versus food sponsorship.
Okay, for 10 minutes.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Kevin, and I am a bulimic.
Hi, Kevin.
And I'm glad to be here. And I was asked to share about sponsorship and food sponsorship, and what that means, and my experience with it. And that's where I come from with this. This is about my experience because that's the only thing I really have to share is my experience with it. You know, and. When I first came to Overeaters Anonymous in 1983, I did everything that was required of me except get a food sponsor. You know, so, I was basically just followed directions and took suggestions, but I didn't get a food sponsor because that's the one thing I didn't want to give up. I had... I had a lot of control issues around food and wanting to, I just wasn't willing to do that. You know, I didn't want to give up the control of it. And, and this kind of set the stage for my being able to sponsor people because I find that, I seem to encounter people who have the similar issue with that. It's like, why do I need to do that? And there's a lot of resistance. I know that I've heard other people share about it, but I had a lot of resistance getting a food sponsor. And but eventually I did, and I still, I struggled with the food and stuff, and I was still in the process of, going to therapy and trying to just interrupt the cycle of active bulimia. And that was, I purged by various means. And, I don't need to really get into the details of that, but, vomiting, exercise and restricting and laxative abuse, So that was kind of where I came from with that, I was like, my worst, I was, 135 pounds, and I was eating 6 pieces of toast a day and vomiting that up. So, and I had a lot of, I come from a background of a lot of medical people, and they were like, we're going to put you in a hospital if you don't stop, I struggled with abstinence for about another 8 months, and then I finally, got the abstinence, and, but it still was a struggle for me. But I found a decent sponsor that was willing to take my food, and I began to eat appropriately because I didn't know how to do that. So the whole thing about my come into program was that I needed to connect. If I wanted to have this thing that people call recovery, I need to connect with people. And my whole disease process is about disconnecting. That's what it's all about, and it's about just disconnecting and ending up in self-destructing. So, I needed to establish some basic discipline in my life. And so I came to meetings, I had a food sponsor, I called them every day, I committed my food, I wrote down my food and committed that, and that established over time, a decent repetition of consistency, and I was able to get some discipline into my life, which I didn't want to do because I was, that was another part of my disconnect, And so as time goes by, I begin to, in order to keep this moving forward, I had to continue this connection, and establish it more. And people would talk about working the steps and having a higher power and how this can move me on to a better recovery, this whole thing about recovery. And I'm like, you know, what do we need to do this for? This is, you know, ridiculous. You know, this is completely not, like, you know, I have an issue with being inappropriate. And, you know, and I've come from a place where it was like, I'm okay with that, and now it's like, you know, I'm not okay with it. So, but my very first sponsor said, you're going to have stuff happen to you, and if you don't learn to address these things in your life, it's going to come out sideways. And that was it, you know. And I disconnect, everything comes out sideways, mm-hmm. you know. And it's, and that's putting it pretty mildly, you know. That's because it didn't. So anyway, you know, eventually I got to a place after a long, long time of just being abstinent, like I think I was abstinent about 14 years. And just coming to meetings and doing service and doing all these other suggestions. And I finally got exposed to sponsorship. You know, what is it like to be a sponsor? And in order to do that, I had to find somebody that could really sponsor me. So what it came down to for me and what I found was the difference between a food sponsor and a sponsor was that a food sponsor takes me, you know, helps me establish a discipline with the food, and could be very, you know, hands-on kind of stuff, like, this is abstinent, this is not abstinent, you know, this, you know, and it's very, it was able to allow me to establish this little discipline so I could do the real discipline, which was have a spiritual experience. The way that I was taught how to do that was to have a sponsor who has exact experience with doing the steps out of the big book take me through that process. And I fell into a group of guys out of Hyannis, Massachusetts, that were just militant about this. They were just like, you know, and it was, the disciplinaire was very, very, very strict. So it was, quite scary at times, but, you know, it really helped a lot. And that became this incredibly strong part of my recovery. And, you know, and that was, and then I moved out of that phase, and, you know, because I moved back down here over from different circumstances. And then I got exposed to a whole different group of people and started having a different experience with them and growing in my own recovery. And what happened was, there was a lot of stuff that I got from the previous experience was harming me. And, you know, right now I have a really good sponsor that's taking me through this process, and I'm doing amends right now. And he is a Buddhist, and he's exposed me to a real lot of cool stuff, like the glass is half empty and the glass is half full, and which is pretty cool, like, you know, stuff. But he also says stuff like, the thing that's going to help you is also going to harm you. And that's something I have to be aware of, because there's always this, it's about balance now. It's about balance in my life, which I don't want to have balance. I like chaos. You know, I'm a master of confusion and chaos and a bunch of other crazy stuff. You know, it's been about finding balance in my life, and I got a lot of stuff going on in my life currently, and it seems very, very chaotic, but it's all really good stuff. And you know, I look at life now from both sides of the coin, because I just don't have to look at one side, or, and actually it is multifaceted, you know, and there are many options now. And that's the idea of, like, you know, having a food sponsor gives me a current discipline, a little discipline to follow. And I have somebody who I do that with, you know, and I recently, you know, got this guy a few months ago, and it's been really cool. Really love having that experience with him. And, you know, and it's just somebody that, you know, I commit food to. It's just somebody I bounced something off of. It's somebody that I say, hey, I'm being accountable to you because this is really my commitment between me and my higher power, and I want you to be in on that, and you can speak into it, you know. And this establishes, and then I don't have to worry about the food. It's there. It's there, you know. It's what it is, and I move on to other bigger and better things because it's, you know, I come here so I can go live my life because, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do, I guess. You know, I've not really figured that one out yet. Maybe when I grow up, I will. But, you know, and but it, you know, I like, you know, I like this process of living in on a spiritual basis. It's a lot better than where I was with it, which was disconnecting from life and not wanting to connect with anybody, you know. And it's still, and it is a challenge, you know. Currently, you know, I guess I'm in a place now where I'm like, I'm back in therapy again, and it's like, why do I want to disconnect from everybody and all this other stuff? But it's like, you know, so I just, some days it's just like, show up, do the discipline, you know, go through the motions of having a, you know, spiritual recovery. And other days it's a lot easier, you know. So, you know, I encourage people to, you know, get a sponsor, get a food sponsor. You know, if you really have this problem, you know, you're welcome. You know, hang out with us, and it'll change your life. Thanks.
I would now like to introduce Janet. She will be speaking on steps 1 through 3 for 30 minutes.
Now, after. Hi, everyone. I'm Janet, recovered from compulsive eating and bulimia.
Hi.
I'm sorry I'm late. I actually got pulled over and got a ticket. I did not realize that if a cop has someone pulled over on the shoulder and you're in the right-hand lane, you're supposed to pull over. So I said, okay, I'm on my way to speak at a 12-step meeting. If you're going to give me a ticket, just please do it quickly. So here I am. And it's not even one where you just pay $20. I actually have to go to court. So deep breath. Here I am with all of you, and I'm very excited to be speaking on this. My sponsor actually did a 9-to-5 workshop yesterday on the steps, so my head is definitely in there. And I prepared a little manual thing on the first 3 steps, which is over there. So if you could all want to grab one after, I don't want you to look at it now because I'm still self-centered enough that I want attention on me and not to have you all with a head in a book. So let's go. I'm going to just say a quick prayer first. Heavenly Father, thank you for this life-giving program. Thank you for all the wonderful friends I've made in this fellowship. Thank you for removing the obsession. And thank you for giving us all access to you. Please help the words I say just bring you glory. Amen. So I have 2 favorite lines in the big book. One I'll tell you about later, but one of them is on page 89, and it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking or binging as intensive work with other alcoholics or compulsive eaters. So that's why it tells us it's really critical for us to work with others. But how do we do that, right? That's the $64,000 question. So step 12 starts, that's our mandate to work with others. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive eaters. So right away, that gives us a ton of information. It tells me, first of all, that I better have a spiritual experience myself. Otherwise, I don't have any business doing this. It would be like a blind person trying to do brain surgery on someone. It's dangerous. And I say that because I spent my first 6.5 years in OA binging, going through, I said this yesterday, about 50 different sponsors, all of whom were well-intentioned, but none of whom had done this work. So they might have succeeded had I just been a problem eater. But for a real compulsive eater whose only hope is a relationship with God that's strong enough to transform me, I needed a miracle, and I needed someone who'd been through this work. So first of all, we need to have the spiritual experience ourselves. So if someone's looking for a sponsor, you want to make sure you find someone who's done this work and has had the change. What is a spiritual experience? So that's defined on page 567 as a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism or compulsive eating. So basically, if someone is still binging, they either have never had this kind of spiritual awakening, or they had it, but it got eroded because they failed to live in steps 10, 11, and 12. So what do we do? So the first thing is to make sure, as a sponsor, that we've had this. Otherwise, obviously, we just want to go back and do the work. The second thing is to make sure that we qualify the person we're working with. Probably the first 10 out of my 50 sponsors, I probably didn't deserve to be sponsored because I had to meet some qualifications, and I'm not sure I did at that point. Some of them are on page 59 of the book. It says, if you've decided you want what we have, which is recovery based on spiritual work, and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So if a person isn't willing to do the work, then I'm not supposed to be sponsoring them. So someone says, you know what? I'm not willing to go to any meetings. I'm not willing to be on a food plan. I'm not willing to do what these 12 steps say. I can't help them. Again, it would be like someone going to a doctor saying, doctor, okay, I got it. I got cancer. And the doctor's saying, great, here's the medicine you need to take. No, I don't do medicine. Well, then he's probably going to say, then I'm probably not the right doctor for you. In working with others, it also talks about having a long talk with the prospect and meeting him again. And by the second visit, it says, he has read this book and says he is prepared to go through with it. So a lot of times we're scared to qualify someone. We say, oh, if I tell someone they need to, you know, read something, they're not going to do it and they're going to leave. When I was desperate, on to sponsor 51, I think, and she said, read this book. I was at the Concord, the OA convention, and I read it that night, the first 164 pages. I read that book. So if someone isn't going to bother reading this book, they probably don't have the desperation of a drowning man, which this program calls for. So let's assume we've met someone. They say, I'm willing, and they read this book. Just one more thing I want to say about willingness. I've had people say to me, well, I must not be willing because I'm still binging. And that's really not true. Again, a person wouldn't say to their oncologist, I must not be willing to be healed from cancer because my cancer cells are still multiplying. No, that just means you have an untreated illness. So willingness to recover, I guess the way I would put it is, if your fairy godmother would come and wave a magic wand and say, if I say abracadabra and you'll never binge again, would you want that? If the person says yes, they're willing. Are you? But then it's a question again, are you willing to do the work? So don't ever think that just because someone says, I'm still binging, that means they're not willing. That's why we're all here. We all came in here because we were either binging or starving ourselves. Okay, so the first thing, we go through the first three steps. And I believe a sponsor's job is a teacher and a guide to guide someone through the steps. So this little manual I have is actually, I sit down with someone and I go through the big book with them, and I took the parts of the big book that, for me, again, everyone will get their own rhythm to it, that I thought were the most helpful into guiding someone through the first three steps. So, because the big book is really a blueprint for our recovery journey. We come in at point A, where we're powerless over food and our life is unmanageable, and we end up at point B, where we're no longer obsessing about food and life is awesome. So this is really about how to get from point A to point B. Coming in at a first step doesn't move us one inch away from point A. It just gets us in the door. So the big book says, before they tell people what they need to do, they want to make sure they understand what this illness is. So this makes it unlike anything like pneumonia or cancer or diabetes, because if I have any of those, I don't need to understand how I got it, what it is, what the manifestations are. If I have pneumonia, I just need penicillin. But for this illness, they tell us specifically we need to understand. You know, they tell us, if you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. But before going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them. Because part of our illness, unlike pneumonia or diabetes or cancer, which are all in the body, this one centers in our mind. So we need to have some understanding of it. There's three types of alcoholics or compulsive eaters that the big book talks about. And this was immensely helpful to me because during my 6.5 years, I saw people come in and not do the steps and get better. And that wasn't fair. But the book tells me why. It talks about the three types of drinkers or eaters. A moderate eater, someone who can stop just because the doctor says so. That was my husband. He was 10 pounds overweight about 10 years ago. The doctor said, you have high blood pressure, you need to lose 10 pounds. The guy just lost the weight and kept it off. I don't know how he did it. Every now and then I'll see him like eat a ton and then just eat salad. And I don't know how he does it. He's a moderate eater. Then it talks about the hard eater. And this is the tricky part. A hard eater is further progressed. In fact, the big book says, this man may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. So there's some alcoholics who do need detox or rehab, and some compulsive eaters who need some kind of structure, like Weight Watchers or OA, because they need a food plan, calling in their food, meetings, support, hugs, pats on the back. But then it says, but what about the real alcoholic, the real compulsive eater? That was me. They may start off a moderate drinker. That was never me. They may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. I don't think that was even ever me. But at some stage of his drinking, eating career, he begins to lose all control. That was me. And people like me need miracles. They say, some point of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. So it's telling me, once I take the first compulsive bite, I'm in trouble. And this is, again, what we need to convey to our sponsees. They need to get this. So if that's all there was to it, all I'd have to do is avoid that first compulsive bite, right? It's like someone who's allergic to, allergic to strawberries. They just stay away from strawberries. But what if they couldn't? What if there's something in their brain that said, this time I can have strawberries and I won't break out in hives, and they break out in hives, and they say, I'm never doing this again. And the next day, sure enough, they eat strawberries and break out in hives. The problem isn't the strawberries then, is it? The problem is something in the brain that says, this time will be different. So we have what the book calls a curious mental twist. So we need to understand that. In the book, it says that the tragic truth is that we pass into a state where the most powerful desire to stop is of absolutely no avail. So to help your sponsee take a first step, it's to help them realize that no matter how much they want to stop, they won't be able to stop. Just like if I'm blind and I want to see, short of a miracle, I'm not going to be able to see. It's really important to understand what this insanity is. Normally, our defense against doing something harmful is our memory that it's harmful. For instance, the book uses the example of a hot stove. If I put my hand on a hot stove, I'll get burned. But what if I had a broken memory and I kept forgetting that if I put my hand on a hot stove, it would burn me? Well, we'd say, that's insane. If someone said, I had a hard day at the office, I'm just entitled to put my hand on the hot stove for 5 minutes, or I had a fight with my husband, or I'm mad at my mom, so I'll just touch the hot stove for a second, or this time it won't burn me, this time it will be different, or, one of my favorites, I'll start staying away from hot stoves tomorrow. We would say that person was insane, but that's how it is with us, and that's what a person has to understand. Normally, there's a connection, there's a nexus between our memory of the dangerous behavior and our wanting to do it. I personally am very allergic to cats. I remember, if I go near cats, I can't breathe. So it's almost like a pulley. Go near cats, don't breathe. So I don't do it. So person, touch a hot stove, hand gets burned, don't do it. But it's like, if I were like some people who do props, this would be a great visual. Eat too much, end up sick, hating myself, overweight, wanting to die. It's like someone took a scissors and snipped that connection. It doesn't work. So if I don't have a mental connection, I need a different kind. I need a spiritual connection. Oh, I am way not in my timeline, so I'm going to have to go really fast. So generally, chapter 3 talks about really getting to the heart of a first step. And so what I just find is helpful is to have a person take a piece of paper, fold it in half, write on one side all the things you've tried to do to stop binging. Then write on the other side what the results have been so they could see it in black and white, what didn't work. And then the second part of the first step is on page 52, what we call the bedevilments, having trouble with personal relationships, can't control our emotional nature, things like that. So once a person sees how they're powerless, and it's so important to understand, because later on, people who don't get this, they'll say, well, I took my will back. No, we don't. Taking our will back would be, dear God, I gave you my will, now I want it back, thank you, amen. We don't generally do that. It's generally that people don't have a first step. And without that, it's going to be difficult to go and first have the incentive to do the rest of the steps and then to build on them properly. So we've done step one. All that does is get me in the door. That doesn't give me one drop of power. That doesn't move me to point A to point B. So let's say I've really taken a first step. Your sponsees have really taken a first step. Now what? Well, step two says, we came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What? How do I believe something I don't believe? And what does that do? But it tells me I have to because I have no mental defense against the obsession. So it tells me if, when you honestly want to, this is the beginning of We Agnostics, you find you cannot quit, or if, when you start, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic, compulsive eater. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Again, it's the job of a sponsor to guide a newcomer to the point where they can have their own spiritual experience, their own experience of God. So how do we do this? First, I'll tell you what a spiritual experience isn't. It isn't having more serenity, feeling less resentful, or even having a vision of God. The kind of spiritual experience that the Big Book talks about is removal of the obsession of compulsive eating. So if a person hasn't stopped eating compulsively, they haven't had this kind of spiritual experience, or like we mentioned, it's been eroded. Well, how do you get it? So on pages 44 and 45, it has all these like long paragraphs that we probably just skip over because they're a little dense. So I'm just going to touch on a couple things. It says, lack of power. That was our dilemma. So my problem was lack of power. My problem wasn't food. The problem isn't alcohol. It's lack of power. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? And then it tells me that's exactly what this book is about, helping us find a power greater than ourselves so that we can have a spiritual experience. And then on page 44 and 45, it has those like real dense paragraphs about forests and trees and, you know, theological systems and warring individuals. And what the heck does that mean? But embedded in that paragraph, in those couple paragraphs, are the five reasons why people don't believe in God. And like, we're all addicts who think we know better, so I'm sure someone will come up to me and say, there's a sixth reason also. And that may be, and then I'll just revise this manual for the next workshop. So, but here's the five that I found out of these paragraphs. One, and this is all in the manual that I have for all of you, so you don't have to write this down. The concept of God we were given as children is inadequate for some reason. Nuns and rulers. I mean, that's one that, you know, people may use. I got, you know, the nuns used to beat me up when I was a kid. I was told that, you know, God would put me in hell forever. We don't have to use the God we were that we were raised with. We're allowed to have our own concept of God, provided it makes sense. Light bulb doesn't make sense. Sponsor as higher power doesn't make sense. Group as higher power doesn't make sense, because as much as the group may love someone, how can it give you power? If we're all a bunch of recovering diabetics or cancer patients in remission and we love you and you've got cancer, you're not going to go in remission if you make us your higher power. So it's God, but as you understand him. So first, the concept of God we were given is inadequate. Second, we believe that believing in God makes us weak. Third, if there was a God, he wouldn't run the universe so poorly, meaning God wouldn't have made my parents die. This one gets sick. My husband leave me. You know, my child have a handicap. God would do a better job if he existed. Four, people claim to believe in God aren't very nice. And it's funny, when we say that, no one ever looks at Mother Teresa and says, wow, she believes in God, there must be something to it. We look at the people who misuse their power and their authority, and we use that as an excuse. No. And the fifth one, my personal favorite, if I really believe in God, I can't do what I want. Because the book tells me the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So as a sponsor, it's our job to find out what the blocks are in our sponsee, which of these five things, or the sixth one that you guys are going to tell me later, gets in their way of believing in God. And then they can start turning to God, because it tells us, as soon as we're able to lay aside prejudice, and all those five things are prejudice, prejudgments, preconceived notions, and express even a willingness to believe, dear God, I'm not sure you exist. And if you exist, I'm not sure that you care about me. But if you exist and you care, I need help. As soon as we do that, we commence to get results, which is power. They say, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God, with a capital G. Big Book makes no bones about it. Nowhere in here will you see God can be the group, a light bulb, or your sponsor. It's God with a capital G. Then it tells us such a cool thing. We don't need to consider another's conception of God. My sponsor's conception and mine are totally different. I'm a Christian. She's, I'm not quite sure I know what she was born, but what she believes, it doesn't fit into any religious system I know of, but she has a phenomenal recovery, and I respect hers, and she respects mine. It doesn't matter. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and effect a contact with him. As soon as we did that, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. This is where we start moving from point A to point B. It's as if we have an infusion of power coming into us, like a blood infusion. It comes in, provided we took other simple steps, which are the rest of the steps. I have 8 minutes left to do step three. Okay, so let me try and go quickly. So step two, we come to believe that a power could restore us to sanity. Oh, there's one more thing I want to say about that. So there's some people, and I was one of them, who believed in God. There was a God. God created the world. God could do anything. God could restore people to sanity, but he wouldn't restore me personally to sanity. And there's usually two reasons why someone thinks that. So again, as a sponsor, you want to help them find out what it is. The first one, I don't deserve it because I've done this really bad thing in my life. Well, if that's the case, you can remind them of the ninth step, where we get a chance to fit right everything, fix everything, and then it's like we get a clean slate to start over. And two, God might help people with cancer because they can't help themselves, but I did this to myself. It's my fault I have this. And in that, if that's the case, review step one with them, how this is an illness, and go over that we were powerless over it. We didn't binge because we wanted to. We binged because we couldn't help it. Okay, 6 minutes and 45 seconds to do step three. Okay, I'm going to have to start talking Jersey really fast. I'm going to skip the part about honesty, which is at the beginning of chapter five. I'll just say that it says very clearly, if you're not honest, don't even bother. It's true. It's like, you know, it's just like, don't even bother. Don't, you know, there was an alcoholic I knew. He said, when someone comes along, we can't do much. We can't stop ourselves from, like, feeling resentment. He said, but every alcoholic can do two things. They can stop lying and they can stop stealing. We have the power to do that. Even if you're like me at the beginning, who I would talk in mid-sentence, say, wait, that was a lie. Here's the truth. And after a while, now if I'm dishonest, it makes me feel like I want to throw up, and not in a bulimic way. It's just like, that's just not who I am. It feels alien. So I'm going to just focus on the part, step three, about turning our will and our lives over to God. And again, those couple of very dense paragraphs where it talks about the actor who's always trying to run the show. If only people would do as he want, everything would be fine. Maybe you're a little at fault. Maybe I'm a little at fault, but you're going to do it my way. And it says, what is his basic trouble? So this is my basic trouble without God. Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? This part is really important to understand, because what does it mean to turn our will and our lives over to God? So generally, we have goals, and they may be good ones, such as being a good employee, raising good, you know, God-fearing, obedient children. Those are good goals. But it's radically different than if my goal is simply to do God's will. So for instance, if my goal is to have my daughter be a respectable girl, and she's not being respectable, and that's a good goal. No one would tell me that's a lousy goal. If she's not being respectful, I'm going to get resentful. I'm going to get manipulative. I'm going to feel sorry for myself. All these things. But if my goal is just to do God's will, and I say, okay, it's God's will for me to parent her a certain way, at the end of the day, as long as I can say, I parented her a certain way, I'm okay. So it shifts, my analysis shifts, it's a whole paradigm shift from a goal-oriented thing, having a daughter who's respectful, having this, achieving this, to simply one goal, one question, did I do God's will in this area of my life? So if I parent her, and I'll tell you now, I have a son who's in rehab for stealing. We adopted him when he was about two from a Soviet orphanage. He was always hoarding and greedy, and as he progressed to about 13 years old, it got dramatically bad real fast. And he started stealing our credit cards, stealing hundreds of dollars from my husband's wallet. We put in a safe. He'd hide in the closet to look for, you know, to try and see the combination. It was awful. So we decided we had, for his own good. By the way, he's doing amazing. But I didn't sit there and say, I'm a failure as a mother because I couldn't get my son to stop stealing. I couldn't make my son. I just say, did I do God's will? Yes. I loved him. I got therapy for him. I did everything I could think of to do, which came to the heartbreaking decision of sending him away for a year because it's in his best interest. But I'm okay because I was doing God's will. And as long as I do that, the results don't... Now, he may come out and be phenomenal, or he may come out and be a thief. That's not my business. That's between him and his God. My job is to be obedient to God in how I try to raise him. So, again, it's a whole paradigm shift that we have. So, I have 2 minutes left. Trying to think what's the most important thing. You know, I guess I'm going to talk a little about the third step prayer and the fruits of the third step prayer. We talked about how this program is moving from point A to point B. The third step prayer really moves us there. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, making that paradigm shift and giving our lives to God, saying, God, it's basically like, here, God, here's everything I'll do for you. Signing our name at the bottom and giving him a blank piece of paper. When we do that, it tells us most good ideas are simple. He's the father, we're the children. He's the director, you know, he's the principal, I'm the agent, I'm the player. I just have to do what he wants. And then what happens? He's all powerful, so he provides all the power I need. If two things I need to do, keep close to him, through prayer, meditation, and performing his work well, my obedience to his will, which at this point is just going through the rest of the steps. And at that point it says, we feel new power flow in. We're moving closer here. We enjoy peace of mind. I never had that before. We could face life successfully. We're conscious of his presence, realizing God is right here with me. We begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Okay, in my last 49 seconds, I'll tell you my other favorite line. It's in, I think, I meant to look it up. I'm almost positive it's in There Is a Solution. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. I could do all the work I wanted. I could write all the inventories I wanted. And by the way, this manual only goes up to step 3. My sponsor showed me, I've been in the program working these steps since I was in high school, a new way to look at step 4 out of the big book, but a new way that helped me really see my part in everything, everything. I was a victim of nothing. And so if anyone wants a copy of that or to talk about how to do that, my phone number, my email is on the front of this manual. But for the grace of God, there would have been so many more convincing demonstrations. I know I would have been one of those demonstrations of someone who would probably be dead for now, but for his amazing grace that saved a wretch like me. This program really works. I was spiritually blind, and now I see because of what he does for us and what he promises to do for us if we do what's in this book. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane.